Previously on Kane's Cast.
I think this is a good way to wrap up this episode of Kane's Cast 131.
Episode 131. Hopefully we get to talk to you next week.
Yes, and bring you episode 132.
But
we'll leave that, we'll see. Much like Lost, as a cliffhanger.
Yeah, the cliffhanger. Tune in next week with maybe we have an episode.
Hopefully the smoke monster does not eat our podcast. The Web's Michael Smith. I only have one thing to say to you.
What's that?
Time to press play.
And we're back.
We're back.
Do you remember how to podcast?
No.
I'm not really sure.
Not I remember at all.
How to podcast.
Not at all. I hardly remember how to speak to people right now.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, my beard is so long, it's getting caught in the microphone.
And you can look across and notice why I don't grow a beard through masks and social distancing.
It's been 4 months, almost four months since our last episode. Thank you to everybody who reached out during the past 4 months asking us when the next episode would be. Sorry we couldn't give you a better answer.
Let me just put it to you this way. One of us could answer, the Web's Michael Smith, and hopefully with recent events coming to light in certain circumstances, you found out why I couldn't.
Yeah.
We wanted to. We just...
Oh, we wanted to dearly.
We could not.
But, you know, there wasn't much to talk about for the first month or so. You know, it wasn't until late May where the wheels really got going, you know, towards what we're in now, which is the phased return to sport protocol that the NHL's laid out. It was late in May when Gary Bettman first announced that, and that's really when everything got moving. The momentum really started towards what we're really going to dive in and talk about today. So thanks for everybody for sticking with us, being patient. Hopefully you find this podcast again, and hopefully it's just as good as the last one.
Yeah, we greatly appreciate it. And where are we now? Episode 132?
Episode 132, yeah. And, you know,
normally I start off with episode 132 of the Kane's Cast.
We've lost count.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Do we reset the counter? Because everything's new.
It was, we left last episode as a cliffhanger, and it certainly was a cliffhanger.
Yes, it was.
The smoke monster did indeed eat our podcast, but we got it back.
All right. Let's not get into movies or food until later on, because our good friend, the strength coach for the Carolina Hurricanes.
This is Bill Bernstein coming to you live from the Canes locker room.
And he's more than just that. He is a great human being. Told us, stay in our lane.
He did, yeah.
And that's it.
And we've got plenty to stay in our lane.
About.
So we shouldn't have any problem doing that. So we're back. And we have hockey to talk about in July.
We absolutely do, which is something that I didn't think we would ever truly talk about outside of free agency and
right.
Some player moves, but actual games to talk about. And yeah, the clock is ticking fast. I think that maybe the most anticipated exhibition game that the Carolina Hurricanes have ever played is coming up July 29th in Toronto against the Washington Capitals. But you mentioned the NHL, Michael, how they handle the protocols and all this. This has always been a question, and everybody's had it, which is, well, did they do this right, or what would you have changed? In hindsight with these issues is always 2020. But overall, just an overall theme, how do you think the league, the players, the owners, everybody handled this situation getting us ready for the return to hockey here in August?
I honestly think the NHL, when you look at the four major sports leagues in the United States, so MLB, NBA, NFL, all included.
Oh, and by the way, yes, the NHL is part of the four major sports leagues. I know that yes, became a bit of an issue a few months ago with certain people in the talk radio industry.
Yeah,
on the national level, that is.
Right. I honestly think the league kind of led the way in what they were planning to do. They were the first to really get ahead of everything and announce their plan. Now, there weren't a lot of details. That plan really wasn't you know, totally fleshed out in late May when Gary Bettman first announced it. There were a lot of wrinkles, a lot of question marks, still some question marks, to be honest with you. But I think the league handled it really well, especially when you look at a league like the NFL, who out of the four major sports leagues was not playing in March and had all the time in the world to figure out how they were going to approach their 2020 season. And it's such, you know, this is very NFL, the hubris of that league to have really not prepared anything. And now they're kind of stuck and there are a ton of question marks about how this season is going to go. Then you look at the NHL, and while there might be question marks, you know, heading into the future, for instance, when does the 2020-2021 season begin? Mm-hmm. And are there fans? And is it going to be a full 82-game season? There are a lot of those question marks. But when you look at tying a bow on this season and doing so safely and responsibly, I think the NHL has handled this extremely well. And I think the plan that they've come up with, we kind of talked about it before the podcast took a hiatus, right when the pause began, about, you know, what was the NHL going to do to make up for the fact that there was still about a month left in the regular season, some teams fighting for playoff spots. Would they expand the playoffs? And I think they ended up coming up with a plan that no plan was going to benefit everyone. But I think this is one of the best ways they could have approached it. And it's going to make for one hell of a postseason tournament.
Oh, absolutely. I'm very interested to see how the tournament is going to turn out. Now, if we can go back, if there are things that I would have liked to have seen the league handle, you know, a touch better, I think the announcement of where the two conferences were going to play, the bubble cities, because every day that was turning into a soap opera.
Yeah.
You know, as the bubble turns.
It was almost like following CBA negotiations during a work stoppage. And how about that, too, for the league and the PA to take this time to hammer out a CBA extension and have some extended labor peace.
That to me is the overriding anything that people had a claim that they didn't like that the league did, or there was a misstep here. They got a CBA done during this.
Yep.
That alone is the one thing. If you talk about what good, if anything, comes out of this, that there's going to be labor peace for the foreseeable future for the National Hockey League, because I think that we were staring down the barrel of a lockout. I think we were. I think we were looking at that.
Yeah, I was.
And the longer it went without anything moving, it becomes tougher to get the deal done. In this situation, they got, okay, your side's not doing anything, our side's not doing anything, let's try to come together and reach some kind of extension, which they did, which was, I think that two years down the road, we'll look back and say, all right, that was the biggest positive that came out of all of this, that we got a CBA done between the NHLPA and the owners.
I agree. And, you know, a credit to them for not only hammering out the finer details of this incredibly unique 24-team postseason tournament that they're staging, but also having the foresight to go ahead and hammer out some of those details in the CBA. And that's a good sign for this league moving forward, especially when you look towards the Seattle franchise entering the league. A new TV deal on the horizon, some big things coming in the coming years for the league, and to be able to have labor peace throughout that is a good sign for the league's health.
I mean, that helps the TV negotiations that you're talking about.
Yes.
Because if you're going to be one of these networks and revenue is going to start coming in, you want to make sure that you have a product that you can put that revenue behind.
So let's turn the clock back to late May when really the first details of this plan were announced. And, you know, news came out that two teams had voted against the proposed plan, the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Carolina Hurricanes being the two teams. It honestly sounded like there was more, there were more reservations that teams might have had, but it was just that Tampa and Carolina voiced those concerns with their dissenting votes. And I totally get why both of them you know, voted against the plan. You know, they were looking at it from a standpoint of making sure that this postseason tournament benefited everyone as best as it could. Because, again, there were going to be winners and losers with any plan, whether it's 24 teams, 20 teams, whether you jump right into the playoffs, there were going to be teams that kind of got the short end of the stick. the Carolina Hurricanes voted against it. But in saying that, they're totally on board with returning to play. They're excited to get going. And I think you have to consider them to be one of the Stanley Cup favorites. But what was your takeaway from that time? And, Jordan Martinook and the Hurricanes sort of expressing their opinions on the format.
I had no problem with any team dissenting against this is what we're going to do. One, if you're one of those teams that is the top four in a conference like Tampa is,
yeah.
I can understand why. You want us to maybe play through an extra round to get to the Stanley Cup, which, you know, not everything was truly hammered out at that point in time. And they're like, you're going to bring in another team. They know how hard it is. They're thinking back to last year, what happened to them in the first round where they were a juggernaut. And, you know, this is, we're just going to pick up and go. Well, that's not right. And if you're Tampa, you kind of wanted to ensure that you get rewarded for having another outstanding regular season. You know, yeah. They had 92 points. The Bruins have 100 points. I think the Bruins don't care where they were at. As far as the Canes go, I totally understand. If I was one of those teams that was in the wild card bubble, exactly why I wouldn't want somebody coming in behind me.
Yeah,
we got to play through the wild card. That's going to be tough enough. And now you're going to make us play another series and a short series at that to move on. So anybody who would have voted against, I totally understand the why for it. I'm glad that it passed. I'm glad that we have it.
Oh, for sure.
But the logic behind the no votes is solid. You can't be mad at those teams. I don't think anybody was mad at Tampa or Carolina for voting against it. I think there was grumblings. It's like, well, why are you doing this? Everybody else did it. Like anything. There's no perfect format for this. There's no, and you so eloquently wrote, there's no playbook for all of this.
Yeah.
I mean, we're basically making it up as we go, but it's who has at least done some research or had some foresight. I liked it. The thing that I was being driven a little bit crazy with after it was announced is the, well, of course they expanded to let New York and Chicago and Montreal. And well, first off, Montreal does not impact TV ratings in the United States at all. Not a tick. I don't think that the Montreal Canadiens being on TV all of a sudden has people running to the screens in Wichita, Kansas to go watch hockey. It just doesn't. Chicago, maybe. But if you take a look, they did the most fair thing they could because there were, I think the median was 12 games left for everybody when the regular season was halted.
Yep.
So the Canes had 14, but pretty much everybody was between 68 games played and 71 games played. A few teams had 72. So you think about it, there's 12 games left. That's a lot of time to make up some points or to have another team stumble down the stretch. So nobody was going to be really happy with all this, but I am not one of these people buying into the conspiracy theory of the reason why they expanded the playoffs is so they could get the Chicago Blackhawks and the New York Rangers and the Montreal Canadiens in, because they also have included the Arizona Coyotes and the Florida Panthers. And if we're going to talk about eyes on TV sets, not a lot of people are, you know, clamoring to watch the Panthers play, although that's a pretty darn good team, and I'd hate to play them. And this is where my, if I was one of the teams in the playoffs, I got to go play Florida. You know, they can be dangerous. Arizona can be dangerous. I don't want to play teams like that, but they didn't do this with the express consent of, well, how do we get Chicago and the Rangers on TV?
Yeah.
It's just the benefit of it.
Right.
It truly is.
Well, and anytime you can, you know, engage more fan bases and include, you know, 20, as many teams as reasonably makes sense versus, you know, a smaller field, which I think I, you know, we might have talked about like a 20-team playoff before the podcast took a break. And that might have made more sense. But at the same time, then you still would have had the Hurricanes probably having to play one of those play-in series rounds.
What I like what they did in the compromise is they gave the teams that were the top four teams in each conference the benefit of the doubt. You're going to have to play. You're going to play a round-robin tournament for seeding, but you're going to be in. Are we calling the first round and the play-in round is the play? Well, I get confused with all of these things.
It's officially the Stanley Cup qualifiers or the qualifying round. And then it's the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah. So I enjoy the fact that they tried to make it as fair as possible for the four teams that had the best record in each conference.
Right.
And it's not really a bye. It is, but it's not a bye. They have to play. They're playing for seeding, who they're going to play, which is going to matter the way that this tournament is going to shape up.
Right, because then you go back to the playoff structure from a few years ago where you reseed after each round. So whoever ends up with the top seed is going to end up playing the lowest seed all the way through the playoffs for however long they survive. So it's going to benefit a team, one of those top four teams in the East, whether it's Washington, Philadelphia, Boston, or Tampa, to claim that number one spot, because then they're going to play whichever the lowest seed is coming out of the qualifying round. So, those games are going to be vitally important, and they're going to want to play them at a high level too, because the teams that are in the Stanley Cup qualifiers, the teams coming out of those rounds are going to be
ready.
They're going to be raring to go, because they have to. That qualifying round is going to be just as intense, I think, as a first round is in any year, because it is a best of five, and it's do or die. You're playing for basically your playoff lives. So you either move on to the Stanley Cup playoffs, or you unfortunately have to go home after, ramping up for almost a month.
Hi.
That's all the time you're going to have to say to get acclimated.
Yeah.
To go and play. The other thing about it, too, is I think that the teams coming out of the qualifying round are going to be infinitely more prepared than any of the top four seeds.
Yeah,
If you're the top four seeds, you're going to want to play with intensity, but you kind of understand, we're already in. Yeah. So am I really going to block this shot here? Am I really going to, throw that check in the corner or take the check to make a play? You would like to say yes, but they all know they have that next round, that golden ticket punched. Meanwhile, everything in a short series matters. And I'm old, so I remember when they used to have the best of five in the first round. And if you lose that game one, you are behind the eight ball in a hurry. It's not like a seven-game series where you can conceivably lose the first two games in a seven-game series, which we saw last year.
Right.
You lose game one in a short series on a neutral site as well. That's something that we're going to get into in a second. But you lose game one, now what do you do? Do you change everything for game two?
Yeah, and that's what I was I don't really remember best of five series, so I'm not as totally familiar with how it's going to play out, but it sure seems like that first game is going to be vitally important. Like you mentioned, what do you do if a goaltender has a bad game in game one? Do you wait until a second loss to switch them out? Is it too late then? Because then you're a game away from elimination. Everything is going to be heightened in terms of importance, and that first game is going to be so vitally important to go ahead and get ahead 1-0 in a series where you only have to win three games. And I expect it to be extremely intense. Even without fans in the building, which, adds a completely new wrinkle, and we can talk more about that as well. But the mechanics of a five-game series are incredibly unique. And I'm glad, too, that I know there was talk of maybe making the first round and the second round best of fives as well, just to sort of truncate this whole thing. But I'm glad that those remain seven-game series, because that's what the playoffs are all about. And, it makes sense for this, I guess you call it a play-in round, this qualifying round, to be a little shorter. But I'm glad that they kept all the series from there on out best of seven, because that's the Stanley Cup playoffs. That's what we're used to seeing. And once you get down to those 16 teams, I think you want to see them battle it out just as they would have been in April, May, and June.
Yeah, once you get to the first round, I didn't want to see the league bastardize the playoffs just to get a playoff series in.
Right.
I didn't want to see that. So they tried to keep the integrity of the playoffs as best they could. And I'm excited about it because I think this is going to be everything. I think we're going to see great hockey. I think we're going to see sloppy hockey. I think we're going to see some bad games. But at the same time, once you get to halfway through the first round, the second round, it's just going to be off the charts hockey.
Well, I think it was Vincent Trocheck the other day said this might be the best playoffs there ever has been, just because virtually every team is 100% healthy, aside from guys who had season-ending surgeries like a Brett Pesce, for example, who is probably not going to be ready to skate until the end of August. So his availability for...
He would be, conceivably, if everything goes well, he would be a guy who is trending for the conference finals, the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, but then the question becomes for the Hurricanes, do they want to include him on their return to play roster, knowing that a space is being eaten up by a guy who potentially might not play? So a question for the Hurricanes to answer. But every team, you know, is virtually 100% healthy. And for the Hurricanes, that means having Dougie Hamilton back, which they were expecting him back for the Stanley Cup playoffs in April anyway. But now he's had, you know, 4 extra months to skate and get totally comfortable after having surgery to repair that broken fibula in his left leg. That means a guy like Sammy Vatanen, who we thought we were going to see in the regular season, but then had a little setback as he was trying to come back. Now we get a chance to see what he's all about. And Ryan Dezingle, who was banged up a little bit there towards the end of the regular season, obviously would have been totally healthy. Actually probably would have played towards the end of that road trip or when the Hurricanes returned to Raleigh, but now he's 100% healthy. So it gives the Canes a ton of depth and makes them incredibly dangerous. But on the flip side of that, every team is in that boat because everybody's healthy. So it's going to create, I think, an incredibly competitive tournament. And it's interesting you say chaotic, sloppy hockey, because I do wonder what those first few games of the qualifiers are going to be like. Because when you look at the regular season, after a summer off, it takes a couple of weeks for the league to really settle in. I mean, there are some crazy high scoring games. The hockey's kind of chaotic. Yep. You know, are we going to see that in the Stanley Cup qualifiers?
Yeah, I think we are for sure.
Yeah.
The questions though that I have about who's best suited for this or who's going to have an advantage, it's the team that minimizes their mistakes. And you can say that about any game, but no, especially right now, I'm talking about the team that doesn't make egregious turnovers.
Right.
It's the team that manages the puck well. The team that gets their special teams looking somewhat in order. Because early on, power plays are off the charts.
Yep.
You know, and early on in seasons and what we see.
Well, there are going to be mistakes made, and then guys are going to try to make up for them and end up hooking or tripping or, you know, something like that.
So the first round could actually... The qualifying round.
Qualifying round, yes.
Could actually benefit the teams that play a simple game. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that you're not looking to make the highlight reel. There's nobody in the seats to get out of them anyway.
Right.
Not looking to make that play. It's you need to take the risk when it's there. I'm not saying that you play everything close to the vest, but in this case, it's the teams that don't take the unnecessary risks, the teams that make sure that they manage their mistakes well, or how you bounce back from a mistake is going to be even more crucial in that qualifying round, because you're going to see somebody with a bad turnover somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to happen. You're going to see a goalie misplay the puck. It's going to happen in that qualifying round. And it's how do you manage that? How do you come back from that? I'm excited to see it. Although you brought up Sammy Vatanen, you brought up Vincent Trocheck. Let's bring up one more guy, Brady Shea, the not so new guys anymore. They've been with the organization since the trade deadline. How much do you think that this, in the grand scheme of things, benefits a team like the Canes to get those guys to fit in where they've had time to look at film and talk to their teammates or talk to the coaching staff and try to get ready for this? Do you think that that's a benefit, or do you think that we're trying to make a little bit too much out of new guys having more time to acclimate to their new teams? Because they really haven't been playing, so
right.
I don't know how you balance it. Because you get better acclimated by playing, but you also can get settled in by just being around something for a longer period of time.
Yeah, I think it 100% benefits both those new guys and the team itself. I mean, Vincent Trocheck said the other day he spent the pause in Raleigh, sort of just getting settled into his home here, and he took some time to review video of the Hurricanes and. You know, really digest what this team, how this team plays and how Rod Brind'Amour wants to see this team play. And he said that he thought that was, he probably got more out of that than he would just by playing, say, the remainder of March. I think when you look back at his first 7 games with the team, he started to come on there right before the pause. Obviously, he scored that huge goal on Long Island, the overtime game winner. I felt like he was starting to really grasped the system and fit in and find his role with this team right when that pause button was hit. But, you know, having the chance to step back and look at video and really understand what his role is, I think is going to benefit him a lot. And I think when you look at the guys that he's going to play with, whether it's Nino Niederreiter and Martin Natchez or Ryan DeZingle, that's going to be a dangerous line for the Hurricanes. And he's going to make a difference 5-on-5. He's going to make a difference on the power play. And he's going to be a big piece for this team. And for a guy like Brady Shea and Sammy Vatanen, who have actually been paired together here during training camp. So that's two new guys playing together in the Hurricanes' top four on the blue line. And that's a good defensive pairing, I think. And again, you look at the first seven games that Shea played, and I felt like he might have been starting to turn a corner a little bit. And for Sammy Vatanen, this is all sort of new ground because he had not participated in a team practice before the pause. You know, he had worked out off the ice. He had briefly worked out on the ice on his own, but he hadn't got the full experience. And so now he's really getting immersed in the Hurricanes game, in how Dean Chenault and Rod Brind'Amour want him to play. He's an asset that could benefit the Hurricanes power play with the right shot from the point. He's been working in a bit on the second unit power play here these last couple of days in training camp, him and Jake Gardner. So those are options there for the Hurricanes. So, you know, the team that we're going to see on August 1st is going to look a little different than the team we saw on March, 10th, I guess. It's going to look a bit different, and I think it's going to be better too. And that's gonna benefit the Canes, obviously, because they've got a lot of talent and they've got a lot of depth. And, you know, whether they get to use that depth, like you said, a five-game series happens quickly. We'll see. But as Rod Brind'Amour says, the team that's going to win this tournament is going to have depth. And as we sit here right now, the Hurricanes certainly have plenty of depth.
And plenty of decisions to make.
Oh, yeah.
With that depth.
Yeah.
What do you do with the blue line right now if you're Rod Brind'Amour and Dean Chenault?
Yeah, because that's...
And I'm asking you, what do you do with that blue line?
I pass the decision to them. Because, look, they're going to sit two guys on August 1st that probably could play on any of the blue lines on any of the other teams participating in the qualifiers or the round robins. They're going to have to sit, you know, two of... I would guess Joel Edmondson, Hayden Fleury, Trevor Van Riemsdyk, maybe even Sammy Vatanen, but I feel like the team really wants to get him in and get a good feel for what he offers, especially considering he's going to be an unrestricted free agent on, what is it now, November 1st, I think, is the the date.
Yeah.
That's the new July 1st for this year, at least, currently. It could change at any moment.
Probably changed three times as you were setting this up.
It might not even be that anymore. I don't even know if that's accurate, to be honest. But
I don't believe you.
So the Hurricanes are going to have to sit two NHL defensemen, two defensemen with NHL experience that could probably play on any other blue line. It's a great problem to have because then you know that if you have a guy who has a bad game or if you have someone get injured, you can plug someone in and they can play that role very effectively. But, you know, I don't know what the lineup's going to look like on August 1st, especially back there, because there are it's going to be some tough decisions that Rod Brind'Amour and I'm sure Dean Chenault will have some input coaching the defense that they're going to have to make. And the two guys that sit out have to understand, too, that they're going to have to be ready because they might end up going in game two, depending on how game one shakes out. So many things can change so quickly in a best of five that I think you have to be ready for anything at any moment.
Yeah, and I just take a look at it comes down to matchups. If you want to be a little bit more physical on the blue line, then you have a Joel Edmondson that you feel has to play, and you put him there. And Hayden Fleury started to pick up that part of his game as well, so... Then you have Joel Edmondson and Hayden Fleury. But if you think against a team like the Rangers, it's about puck moving and it's transition. Well, Trevor Van Riemsdyk is as steady as they come making those kind of plays for your team. So does he get into the lineup? I mean, it's a lot of questions. It's a good problem to have. And I know you hear that a lot, but it's a very good problem to have. And I think the other part of this is every guy in that locker room understands that. They understand the role. They're going to be fighting for playoff time, but they're also going to know that I might not play game one, but I could be in the lineup game two, and I might not come out the rest of the playoffs if I do my job the way that the team wants me to.
Right. It's only going to drive all of them to make sure they're on top of their game, to improve their game. That's really the main competition that you're seeing in training camp right now. Usually a training camp is 40 to 50 players. You've got your guys that you know are going to go back to junior or, you know, the AHL. In this situation, the Hurricanes have 29 players in town who most of them comprise that NHL roster. They do have a handful of, you know, we can refer to them as black aces or maybe some of the younger, more inexperienced guys. But they have 24, 25 guys who could easily slot into an NHL lineup.
Absolutely.
And that's an excellent problem to have. And you hear Rod Brindamore talk about it, saying, you know, he remembers years where guys had no business playing. And now the Hurricanes have a wealth of options to choose from. And even up front, you look, somebody's going to have to sit up front, whether that's Ryan Dzingel, Martin Nechas, Jordan Martinook. Yeah, I don't know who you choose
Morgan
to sit.
Morgan Geekie. Who, by the way, has had an outstanding how do you do to the National Hockey League. Let's not forget that. His two games before the pause was hit were two of the most memorable in Hurricanes history.
Yeah.
Warren Fogle-like, if you will.
Yeah. There's another name that could end up sitting, but you look back to his playoff performance last year, and he was one of the Hurricanes' top players. So, you know, some decisions to be made there, too, because, again, you're going to have a guy sitting that could probably play. Even a Morgan Geekie, who's only played two games, if he ends up sitting, you know, he's a guy who could feasibly play and handle the rigors and intensity of a playoff-like series just fine.
The other thing that's an advantage for certain players, like a player who might not have been having the season that he wanted to or was expecting to have, that's in the past.
Yeah.
That slate is wiped clean. Because if I'm going to be honest with you, Michael Smith, the 1920 season, 2019-2020 season, that has been paused for almost 4 months, feels like 4 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
So you had guys playing through injury or guys who, you know, maybe were trying to find their fit. Well, whatever happened in the past, what happened, you know, in game for the Canes, they played 68 games. So what happened in game 66 or 60 or 54, it doesn't matter now. It
right.
just doesn't. And they can forget about it. They can come in and start with a fresh page and just take off and go. And I think that that's a huge advantage for the Carolina Hurricanes, because that's one of the things that I've been looking at with the matchups in the playoff series that are out there. Which teams have an advantage? For me, it's young teams. So you got legs that you can get up and going right away.
The Canes check the box on that.
Your two-week training camp, and you have to have a good group of players that understands what their roles are. Canes have that. And you have to have a head coach who can motivate these guys to get going. The Canes, in my mind, check all three boxes.
Yeah, I agree.
And then they get Dougie Hamilton back. And if we were going to talk X factors, we will. But Dougie Hamilton, to me, is a huge X factor for the Canes into the playoffs, because he was controlling games at points in this season. If he can get back to that guy, the Rangers are good on the blue line. They don't have somebody who can do what Dougie Hamilton and Jacob Slavin can do as a duo or as individuals. One guy shutting down the opposition, the other guy creating havoc in the other team's end as a defenseman. So those are pluses for this team, but they have all that. But the funny thing, too, you look at the Rangers. Rangers are kind of in the same boat. They've got a young head coach they love to play for in David Quinn. They're a young team. They have dangerous players up front.
Yes.
And just breaking down, let's just dive into the series, shall we?
Yeah, we can do that.
Let's just slip it on for a minute and see what happens here. You look at what the Rangers have. They've got Mika Zibanejad. I don't know what the state of North Carolina or the city of Raleigh or what this organization did to him to where he feels he has to torch this franchise when he plays against the Canes, but he has been unbelievable against the Carolina Hurricanes, and this season alone is a career that he's had against the Canes. Then you've got the bread man, Artemi Panarin, who is dangerous every time on the ice. Yeah, he's pretty good.
Pretty good.
Pretty good. And people, have you been getting this a lot? The Canes were 0-4 against the Rangers. How did that happen? Yeah.
That's the natural storyline.
I can sum it up and try to boil it down into its essence of why the Canes were 0-4 in the regular season, which, mind you, I just said, leave it there. Mm-hmm. Feels like 4 years ago. Henrik Lundqvist was 3-0 and made 125 saves on 132 shots.
It's like a 947 or something.
And not like it is a 947, almost 950 on the save percentage. And then Igor Shesterkin, who might be the starter for the Rangers in this playoff series, who was playing the best before this, he faced 29 shots in his lone start against the Canes, made 27 saves. That's a 931. You let in two goals and you have a lower save percentage than a guy who let in seven over three games. Yep. So the Rangers' goaltending was outstanding.
It was the difference.
And it's not saying that the Canes' goaltending was terrible, but it was just better goaltending that the Rangers got the saves when they needed to. And the power play and the penalty kill. Canes were 2-for-16 with the man advantage. The Rangers were 5-for-15. 12.5% to 33.
Yep.
That's a big difference.
So how much stock then do we put into that season series?
Me? Nothing. I put everything into the players. I don't put anything into that series right now other than style of play.
Right.
And which team gets to their game.
But the difference makers in the Stanley Cup qualifying series will probably be goaltending and special teams.
It always is. Well,
it's easier to overcome a goaltender. If you're facing a good goaltender, it's easier to overcome that in a 7-game series than it's going to be in a 5-game series.
All right, let me know if I'm talking out of the other side of my mouth here. When I pause on the special teams for a second, you can get by with a bad power play. You can get by with it. You can't get by with a bad penalty kill.
Yeah, I agree.
So you don't have to have a good power play, but your penalty kill, if you're not putting the pucks in with a man advantage, you can't give up goals when you're down a guy. So, you know, the PK, there's always more pressure on the penalty kill in the playoffs than there is on the power play.
And that's really kind of what the Hurricanes ran into with Boston last year. Boston was just lethal on the power play. And that was really, I mean, one of the big differences in the series was just how good they were on the power play. And the Hurricanes couldn't contain it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I remember hearing Rod Brind'Amour say, we stopped option one, they go to option two. We stopped option one and two, they went to option three. He goes, that's a luxury to have when you've got high-end talent, like what the Bruins have, especially on that top line. The Rangers have high-end talent. The Canes are going to have to stop it. I mean, I'm not saying that you go 0-for-12 in the series on the power play, but kick in a goal when you can, but it's the penalty kill. You cannot allow the Rangers to go 5-for-15.
Right.
On the power play.
So I don't put much stock into the season series either, and I don't think I would even if the Hurricanes had gone 4-0. But the differences, the reason why the season series played out the way it did is probably going to be the same reason why the qualifiers play out the way they do. Whatever ends up happening, I think, is you're going to point to a goaltender being good and specialty teams converting not converting.
If I asked you, the player that you look at, goalie's always the easiest one. The goalie is the X factor on both sides. So be it Lundqvist or Shesterkin or Peter Mrazek or James Reimer.
Right.
Put it there.
I mean, the Rangers have questions of who might start. I think the Hurricanes, it's just as fair of a question to wonder who might start.
But I think that you give the nod to Peter Mrazek.
I would agree. Yeah.
Going in. But, you know, there's no time to say, well, he's going to work himself out of something if there's a bad game won.
Right.
That's why the short series becomes even more important. We've already touched on that, but we'll touch on that again. Game one, you can't go into game two going, we're going to ride this one out and see what happens. No, if you feel you need to make a change, you can't wait to make a change in a series that's only 5 games.
Yeah, and unlike last year when the Hurricanes were down 2-0 in round one, you know, they were still 2 games away, the Capitals winning them from being eliminated. The Hurricanes come back, win game 3 and 4. It's a new series. If you're down 2-0 in the qualifying round, you've got to win the last 3 games of the series to move on. That's huge pressure.
And I'll always go back to games 1 and 2 in Washington of that series. The Canes didn't come out with victories, but they could have.
Oh, yeah.
One game goes to overtime, other game's close. They had opportunities to win a game in the playoffs in game 1. So if game 1's close, you're not thinking about making a goaltending change.
It's, right, exactly.
It's the, okay, our guy lets in 4 goals on 12 shots. Now we have to think about, do we make a change? But X factor players that you look at that might need to step up for the Canes, for them to win the series. Who's the guy you look at?
Yeah, aside from goaltenders, because I think that's the easy answer. I look at a guy like Sebastian Aho. You know, when you look at his career coming out of training camps, he's been a career sort of slow starter. And I know this is totally different from a typical training camp, a typical start of the season and everything, because you're going from a training camp of sorts, practices, into the playoffs. So it's different. But the Hurricanes need him to be the top line center that they know he is, right? The Hurricanes need him to be dangerous. They need him to create. They need that line, him, Teravainen, and Andrei Svechnikov, which has been together through practice so far. I assume we're going to see it game one because it is such, when that line's clicking, it's such a good line. They need him to be on top of his game. And I don't doubt that he's going to be. He's looked good so far in camp. He's been skating for months. You know, he had access to rinks in Finland, so he's in a good spot, I think, and is going to be able to make a difference. Here's maybe a wild card is Brady Shea. How much valuable information can he give the Hurricanes on what the Rangers are going to do?
Oh, right now, it's one of those things. You know, he's sitting in a room with a desk writing everything down on everybody.
He's a spy.
Exactly. Tell us what you know.
I mean, I guess you could say the same to an extent for Greg McKegg and Phil DiGiuseppe, but...
But those guys weren't playing this year with this team.
And they weren't playing as long as Shea did. Yeah. Shea was drafted by the Rangers, played 307 games with them throughout his career. So he knows a lot more about what they're about.
By the way, I know that Michael and I have just said that we don't put a lot of stock into the regular season that happened. We're not. But we're talking about a guy who played the majority of the regular season with the team and knows their tendencies. He knows what they want to do.
He beat the Hurricanes 4 times.
Yeah, he did.
So
he knows what they're looking at,
yeah,
what they're trying to exploit, what the Hurricanes do, and what they do well. And that is going to be something where, you know, once you drop the puck, I don't think anybody ever sits there and goes, oh, Brady told me that they liked it.
Right.
You kind of have to have it ingrained in you. But
he's got a little extra motivation, a little extra juice for this series. And so that's going to be fun to watch play out, especially if he's playing, especially if he's paired with Sami Vatanen, who we're all going to get to see, hopefully for the first time in game action, with the Hurricanes, to see what he's all about, because
a right shot D who can move the puck and help the power play.
Right. And was considered one of the top trade deadline targets, even though he was injured at the time, and the Hurricanes were able to land him. So that's, that could be a critical pair. Cause I mean, obviously you look at Slavin and Hamilton, I mean, that's a great defensive pairing. And the Hurricanes are going to benefit a ton by having Hamilton back in the mix. But then you round it out. If you can't have Brett Pesce, you round it out with Brady Shea and Sami Vatanen. That's a pretty good pair, too.
All right. So you've opened up the door for my X factor, which I wanted to go individual players. But for me, the second line of the Carolina Hurricanes. That line of Vincent Trocheck with, be it Nino Niederreiter or Ryan Dezingle, in Martin Natchez. That line has to produce, because I see where you're at with Sebastian Aho being the guy for you, but I expect the stars to be the stars.
Right.
Like, Mika Zibanejad's not an X factor for me for the Rangers. Artemi Panarin's not. I expect them to be what they are. I expect Sebastian Aho, Andrei Svechnikov, Teuvo Teravainen to have a certain level of excellence. Almost demand that out of them.
Yes.
That's what I expect. To me, it's where do you get that other scoring from? Mm-hmm. And if a guy like Nino Niederreiter in the past, who's shown that he can show up in the playoffs and have big performances, and what he can do, if he can be that guy who scores 20-25, you know, that kind of force, that kind of player, if Vincent Trocheck can get back to the guy who was an all-star a couple of years ago, and he's been banged up too, you know, people talk about that. He had a couple of injury issues in Florida that he was trying to come through, and then a coaching change this year. But if he can be that dynamic guy, if he can drive that line, the Canes' second line is the X factor for me, because I expect the top guys to score for both sides. It's where does that next line of scoring come from? And for the Canes, it's got to be that line. And then I'll go to the blue line, a guy like Dougie Hamilton, but getting some offense from the blue line. And Sammy Vatanen was one of the guys I have as an X factor because I don't know what the Canes are going to get out of him.
Right. Yeah, he's kind of a wild card at the moment. But yeah, I mean, that line with Vincent Trocheck, you look at a guy like Nino Niederreiter or Ryan Dezingle, yep, both of which could play on his line, they'd probably both look at their seasons and not be too happy with the way they turned out. And Niederreiter said as much the other day. So this is a chance for them to kind of start fresh. And that's the way a lot of people are looking at this, I think, is, yes, it's a continuation of the season, and you're sort of picking up where you left off. But at the same time, it's a chance to start fresh and to start with a clean slate. And for somebody like Nino Niederreiter, who, you know, can be streaky at times, allows him to press reset and maybe recalibrate and find his game again.
And we hit on this name earlier. Does Warren Fogel show us again that when the lights are bright, he comes to the party well-armed to make everybody happy?
Right, because he could be dangerous there in the bottom six, whether he's playing with Jordan Staal and Justin Williams, or whether he's on that sort of fourth line grind line with Morgan Geekie, Jordan Martinook, who, you know, whoever ends up playing down on that line.
And by the way, the Jordan Staal line, that is more often than not going to draw the Zibanejad line. I love watching those matchups in a playoff series.
Yeah.
You know, who gets the best? And you're going to put the smart two-way center who does so many things that I know when people hear the phrase, it doesn't show up on the stat sheet. If Mika Zibanejad doesn't show up on the stat sheet, that means Jordan Staal had a hell of a hockey game.
Right.
And if Jordan Staal doesn't score a goal or get three assists, but the top line for the Rangers don't do anything, guy had a good game. That's where he shows up on the stat sheet when the other guys that he goes up against don't. And that line's going to be dangerous because, oh, hi, Justin Williams is on that line.
Mr. Game 5.
Exactly.
I mean, hopefully, you know, hopefully it doesn't come down to a Game 5.
I'm hoping for Mr. Game 3 and let's move on and go from there. But there are a lot of things that kind of jump the page to me. But offensively, it's that second line is the X factor for the Canes. And defensively, it's I like how you put that together, the Shea and Vatanen pairing. But Sammy Vatanen, for me, is a guy who I'm looking at. If this is the player in Anaheim who was driving play, if this was the player who, like you said, at the trade deadline was probably the most coveted defenseman who was available and the Canes land him,
yeah,
okay, now you go from there.
Is another X factor for both teams, for all teams, the lack of a crowd?
You know, I think it will be the first game or two, because they're going to know it's going to be unusual. You're going to go out there and there's not going to be fans. There's not going to be that juice. You get juice from the crowd. You get the electricity. You hear that. It's not lip service. Teams feed off of their crowd. And the Carolina Hurricanes certainly feed off of their fans here at PNC Arena when they're in a big game and the crowd is into it. You see it. They get that extra half step. They get more jump in their game. And teams get that in certain buildings. I think that you have a team like Florida, I don't think it matters. You know, I don't think that they care. And I'm not taking a shot at the Panthers, because when everybody looks on TV, nobody's there. They're all up in the club. That's why they're not sitting in their seats. But, you know, for teams like the Panthers, for teams like the Coyotes, I don't think it's that big of a deal for them. Even for a team like, this is going to sound odd, a team like Toronto, because they know their crowd's not going to turn on them if they start playing poorly.
That's true. And if
they're in their building. But there are certain teams, Philly, the Rangers, Boston, it's going to be weird. The Canes,
yeah.
It's going to be weird playing in front of no one. And I think it's going to take maybe for the Canes the qualifying round to kind of settle into, okay, this is, we're just playing it. What's around us doesn't matter right now.
Yeah, I think, I mean, just look back at the first round last year when the Hurricanes came back and, you know, down 2-0 in the series.
What was this crowd?
Yeah, this crowd was unbelievable. And I truly believe helped will the team to victory and even the series in games 3 and 4.
And the other side of it, where I think the building matters, I think it mattered in the second round for the Canes, because the Islanders, who played that first round series and rolled over Pittsburgh, they were playing at Nassau at the Coliseum, where those fans are, it's weird. It's the same fans technically, but they're closer. They're more rabid. They had to move into Barclays, and it was a different environment. It kind of felt sleepy.
Totally different.
And I think you come into here and the Canes fans are foaming at the mouth in a good way to get a playoff series going and move to the conference finals. Yeah, that matters. I think it will, but I think it will dissipate as the playoffs move on.
I'm hoping that a lot of the jitters will be taken care of by that exhibition game. Like, it's going to be totally weird when you first skate out.
Sure.
And, you know, no fans. James Reimer talked about it yesterday. He said, you know, it's weird at first, but then a play's made, a hit's made, a goal goes in, and you're kind of just, you're in the game. And everything around you is sort of tuned out.
I'm actually excited for it because we're going to hear what the players really say and the noises they make
right.
when that goes on. Because, you know, when a goal is scored, you don't hear really what the players are saying on the ice.
No.
Because the crowd roars, which is, it's part of it. I think it stinks that the crowd won't be a part of it. I wish that circumstances are different. Man, I've been saying that a lot lately.
Oh, yeah. That's 2020. We wish circumstances were different.
But for me, that curiosity of, you know, what's going to be said when these things are done and can be picked up
by
the mics.
And when you're coaching on the bench, too, you know, usually you can yell at your players or, you know, yell to do this, this lineup next. I think coaches are going to have to draw that back a little bit because now the other bench is going to easily hear what's going on. So there are a lot of little tactical things that might have to adjust on the fly.
But I'm going to go back to, I think it will be very different and difficult to start, but as the teams move along, they adjust to it. They will adjust to it. Although Rod Brind'Amour said it, you've got to create your own electricity.
Right. There's no, you're not going to get momentum like the Hurricanes did in games 3 and 4, the first round last year, from the crowd.
Nope.
It's going to have to come from within. And that's not to say that the Hurricanes or really any other team can't do that. It's just different and a little harder because, you know, in the playoffs, a big hit can rile up the crowd and give the bench energy and give the players on the ice energy. Maybe it still has that effect to some extent, but there's not going to be that roar that you expect. And Rod Brind'Amour touched on it too a little bit, saying that there's certain cues that the fans give, whether it's, you know, a big hit might be coming or something, you know, you pick up on little different cues from the fans. Those aren't going to be there. So the players are going to have to communicate probably more than they usually do.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're going to have to be vocal. They're going to have to, you know, look out for their teammates because there's not those elements that you're used to hearing, especially if you've played in this league for a while, aren't going to be there. And that's going to be totally different.
Do you like the idea of piping in crowd noise?
I don't know. Yes. Like
I thought it was kind of a yes, no question, but I suppose it's an, I don't know answer. I think we have to see it. I watched a little bit of Yankees and Mets and they were piping it in.
Yep.
And it's weird because I didn't notice it at first. And then when I noticed it, it bothered me more than when I was just kind of watching the game. I'm like, there's noise.
If you just have the game on and you're just sort of listening to it, it sounds like baseball. But then when you're really, you know, paying attention and something happens and the crowd doesn't react like it normally would, that's when it takes you out of it. And I think that's going to be harder to replicate in hockey because things happen so quickly.
Exactly.
You know, watching baseball, it reminded me a lot of just a baseball video game. Like, the crowd was there, and, you know, it reacted the way it reacted. You know, you have hockey video games, and the crowd reacts like that. Maybe it's going to sound a little bit like that. Yeah. I don't know. It'll be interesting
to
see.
So would you go with it or say no? If you had, you only have choice A, have the piped in crowd noise, or choice B, no crowd noise at all.
So I think if I'm watching it on television, I want crowd noise. But I think if I'm playing in the game or a coach on the bench or watching it, you know, in the stands, I don't want it piped in. I would rather just have the game play out as is and, you know, have the ambiance of hockey sounds and be able to hear players, you know, chirping each other and stuff. But if I'm watching it on TV, I think that's part of the experience of building in that crowd noise. And that would help, I think, normalize it a bit and make it not seem not so weird. Of course, it's going to be a little strange in the rink, but I think players are going to get used to it. But from a television perspective, if I'm watching it, I think I want that crowd noise.
Yeah.
Is that a cheap answer to say no. in one situation?
No, no. I think because, again, we've never been down this road before.
Right. 2020, we've never been down this road before.
So there's no right or wrong answer to how you feel on these things. Because like I said, I was just watching the Mets-Yankees the other day, and it was background noise, and I was fine with it until I realized, oh, people aren't there. This, you know, the applause for a strikeout, you know, they riding up the volume a little bit more. Right. I'm like, oh, okay.
It's going to be interesting to see how they handle it for hockey because I'm not really sure just yet what they're going to do, whether it's going to be in arena, whether it's going to be broadcast only. I'm not quite sure. But I do think there is going to be artificial fan noise in some sense.
Nobody is sure.
Yeah, there's still some 2020 question marks.
Nobody is sure.
Oh, what a year. And we're only in July.
Let me put it to you this way. I've had the wildest 9 months of my life, period.
Well, it's going to be interesting. So, okay, so that's going to take place. We're in phase three right now.
Yes, we are.
Phase four is coming up. Teams are going to depart for the bubbles in Edmonton and Toronto. Edmonton for the Western Conference, Toronto for the Eastern Conference. And then, as of right now, the plan is to host the conference finals and the Stanley Cup final in Edmonton.
As long as it doesn't rain.
Yeah, too much.
For those who don't know, there was a severe thunderstorm that hit Edmonton about a week ago and flooded.
There was a bit of water.
Rogers Place.
Yeah. A really great rink, but got a little wet.
Just a touch.
So the bubbles in Toronto and Edmonton, and we touched on this a bit earlier, is, you know, watching these bubbles sort of come together and which cities would serve as the host or hub cities, I guess.
By the way, every time, and I'm sorry to cut you off, I hear the term the bubble. I think of, have you ever seen the movie Beer Fest?
No.
Okay. Well, there's a scene in it where they talk about a bubble. And one of the character goes, the bubble! And that's all I can think of every time I hear that.
I think of like, I mean, he doesn't know he's in one, I guess, in the Truman Show, but that's a that's a bubble. Under the Dome, that's a
bubble.
A very...
The Boy in the Bubble, that was a movie.
Yeah.
By the way, strength and conditioning coach Bill Berniston, we are not talking about movies.
No, we're just drawing comparisons.
Making a reference, yeah. That's all. Like every time I hear the bubble, I think of the bubble. That's all I think.
And honestly, if they could drop a dome... And make it a true bubble, and we could live under the dome, that would be
perfect.
A little easier, I think.
Not going to happen.
But
By the way, nobody step outside of the bubble to pick up food that they ordered, like what we've seen the NBA do.
Yeah.
Please.
Be smart.
Please.
I mean, it's, you know, 2020, be smart. Please.
Please. Yeah, you got to put the please at the end of it.
So these hub cities, you know, Vegas was rumored for a long time. Yep. The cities got whittled down. Obviously, Raleigh was in the mix very early on. But you end up with Toronto and Edmonton. And I think it makes sense from a number of reasons. I think when you look at the COVID-19 pandemic, Canada is dealing with the virus a bit better than the United States is currently. So it makes sense to have two Canadian cities. And you've got good setups in both cities. With Edmonton, that gorgeous new rink that may need to repair a few leaks, has a beautiful new hotel right across the street.
Yep.
And so you don't even have to go outside. You can walk right through the pedestrian bridge. Toronto has facilities there and hotels nearby that are going to make for a pretty ideal setup. What do you think of the two hub cities and how they came about? Because Vegas, for the longest time, seemed to be a good option. But then the numbers started to spike there a little bit.
It's funny because we were talking about this a little bit earlier, that the hub city madness was the thing that, you know, as this was going on, I'm like, just pick.
It gripped Twitter for a few months.
And I'll be honest with you, because Canada was putting the quarantine on, like, if you come here, you have to be quarantined for 14 days. I'm like, there's no way you're going to have training camp, like looking at the phases, that you're going to have training camp. And then you're going to go to Canada and be quarantined for another 2 weeks? And does it mean you can skate? You can't skate? You got to stay in a hotel room? The fact that Canada and the NHL kind of agreed to, all right, we're going to, I guess, lighten their quarantine terms for people who are going to participate, cover this, made it a little bit easier. Because at first, my mind is like, there's no way they can go to Canada if they've got to make everybody sit for 2 weeks and not do anything and not be around each other.
Right.
When they loosen that, I'm like, okay, it makes sense because of what you said. Edmonton, for one reason, because of where it is, it's basically isolated there in the Pacific Northwest. So that's fine. Toronto's a big city.
Yeah.
And people need to understand, you know, Toronto is what I think size-wise close to Chicago, something like that in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, I think of the Canadian cities that I think got hit the hardest.
Yeah.
By
because it's got the most dense right. population.
Yeah.
But it makes sense. I think that Vegas would have worked because of where T-Mobile Arena is and what they were going to use and all of the hotel space. But again, when you saw the virus cases spiking in Vegas when they opened it up a little bit, you can't have that there because that is a hard town to keep track of everybody and to keep in a bubble.
Absolutely. Especially with the size of those hotels and everything. Yep. I think logistically it would have made it very difficult to contain when you compare it to Edmonton and Toronto.
And it's not so much keeping players in, it's keeping people out.
Yeah, I think, honestly, when you look at NHL players, I think they're going to be largely responsible because sure. they know that, you know, if they were to step outside the bubble for some reason or somehow, that they're jeopardizing not only their season, but their entire team season.
Justin Williams said that.
Yeah.
That the players are going to hold each other accountable for this. And right. you've come this far, you know, to step out for a churro or a falafel or, you know, you just wanted to take a stroll somewhere.
A crisp Pilsner from Steam Whistle. Oh, no, sorry. Storm Brew from R&D Brewing.
Crispy. So crispy.
I think they still sponsor us.
I think they do, too.
We should probably shout them out at some point.
Well, I think we just did.
R&D Brewing. Storm Brew. It's a crisp light lager made by our friends at R&D Brewing right here in Raleigh, North Carolina. It's just 97 calories and 2.4 carbs per serving. It's the perfect brew for all occasions. I did that right off the top of my head, and I haven't done it in 4 months.
Slow clap for that.
It's
Hi!
Hi!
It's available at your local grocer.
Sure.
Bottle shop.
Costco.
News store locations are being added daily, and it's crispy.
It is crispy. Storm Brew, the official beer of the Carolina Hurricanes and
Canescast. Sorry, Storm Brew, for leaving you high and dry for 4 months, but I enjoyed a few Storm Brews.
Oh, I enjoyed more than a few. I had the time, so I did. But back to the bubble. I hope it works in the other cities that were there. I thought Columbus was going to make sense because you had Ohio State and then Nationwide.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, when things were starting to whittle down, but then you realize, Columbus, how many hotels do you have? Can you really host that many teams and keep that working? You know, was Pittsburgh going to work? You know, they have the great practice facility in Cranberry that they built, but the arena's downtown, so you're still going to be shuttling people back and forth and dealing with a bunch of people. I hope it works out. I hope that people are responsible. And, you know, now that they've settled on Toronto and Edmonton as the places, you know, the rink in Edmonton is phenomenal. The players love playing in Toronto at Scotiabank Arena. So,
well, the Hurricanes games there this year have been interesting.
And again, if it comes to a fifth goalie, David Ayers is in the neighborhood.
Yeah, he's around.
Shout out to David Ayers.
Big save, Dave.
The best story.
Sure, we give him a call and he'd be there.
Oh, I think so. I wonder if he has to be there.
Yeah, I don't know what the protocol is. I mean, teams can carry.
Yeah. So I imagine the E-Bug is going to be the third goalie that you have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the fourth goalie.
Again, 2020, we don't know. Or we don't know why.
Shrug emoji.
I don't want to laugh at that, but the way you said it, I did.
But really, I think once you get to the bubble, once you get to that phase four secure zone, as the league is calling it so eloquently, I think once you get there, I think things are going to be fine. The most crucial part of all of this is what we're in now, which is phase three training camp in these home markets. And so for 2 weeks, you have players coming and going from the arena, they've been advised to stay at home as much as possible, take out, delivery, avoid contact with the population.
Public, the public at large, yes.
And that's important because all of this, this whole return to play concept relies on being able to get to phase four. And if everybody is responsible and takes care of themselves, we should all be able to get to phase four and get to the bubble in Edmonton and Toronto. And so far, the Hurricanes have had everybody on the ice for practices, and that's good. And I guess we should note, too, going forward, injuries and such, all you're going to hear is that a player was unable to practice or unfit to practice or unable to play, unfit to play. There's going to be no specific injury designation. So whenever a player is missing, I don't jump to conclusions because it literally could be anything.
I know. I'm not a fan of that. I'm just not.
Yeah.
I get the why, but I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah.
I mean, but it is what it is. 2020, it is what it is.
I mean, if you see a guy get injured on the ice, it's going to be pretty clear what's happening. But just because a player might miss a day of practice, I wouldn't jump to any conclusions. It's not a safe thing to do.
No, but it's what people like to do.
Anything else we want to touch on? We got just a few fan questions.
Sure, we could definitely get to the few fan questions. Anything that you want to get to, we're fine to bring up and chat about as well. I'm just excited that the pause button has been released and we are going to get hockey. We are closing in on this. Again,
and
hopefully this phase works out.
Again.
We are. Question for you, because you've got to see it more this week. I finally got to jump in yesterday. But training camp part two, how has it looked to you? Because I was kind of expecting, you know, guys trying to get back into this. And, you know, it's what can you do when you can't go out, when you can't skate, when you can't work out in a gym? But all the reports from the players, Rod Brindamore, from you, from everybody who's been covering, players have been ready to go since they put on the skates and had that first practice here. But how has camp part two looked to you?
I mean, it's looked good. The team's sharp. Energy is high. Pace is high. I've liked a lot of what I've seen. And Rod Brindamore said yesterday, you know, he was asked sort of to assess the first week of camp, and he said, yeah, nothing negative to report. It's all positive. Now, in the second week of camp, I think you're going to see the team focus in a bit more and get sharper in a couple areas. But when it comes to, you know, everyone's physical fitness, when it comes to, remembering the systems and not needing to be coached, I think the team is right where it needs to be. And you're going to see the team really fine-tune some things here in the next week. And prepare for what they expect to see from the Rangers. So you're going to get a little more specific in the next week. The first week was very broad, a lot of review stuff. They started to build in special teams work. You saw the intensity dial up with some scrimmage-type situations over the weekend. And from here, it's going to get a little more specific. They're going to drill down into the specifics, watch some video, prepare for the Rangers, and really correct some of the things that Rod Brindamore and his coaching staff might have noticed in the first week, but sort of wanted to let play out. So everything I've seen so far has been excellent. Everyone seems well-motivated. I don't think anybody it was such a unique break in that it wasn't a typical offseason. The players had to approach it with the mindset that the season would resume at any point. So they stayed in constant contact with Bill Burniston. They stayed in constant contact with Rod Brindamore and it did their best to remain in peak shape, even if they couldn't get to an ice rink, even if they couldn't get to a full-fledged gym. They were doing what they could. And then, slowly you started to see rinks open up or, guys having access to gyms. And then they come back here and start skating here. And then jump into camp, and it's you can tell that the level is high. It's not your typical training camp where you're seeing guys, and not saying guys come into camp out of shape, because that's a thing of the past now. Yep. That training camp isn't used for getting in shape now, but you can tell that there's a different a pace, there's a different energy level to what you're seeing now versus what you would see typically in a training camp in September. So far, all things are good. I think one of the most interesting parts is going to see how that exhibition game shakes out, because that's really a true test of being able to apply what the Hurricanes have reviewed and gone over in these last few weeks, and see how that plays out in a game against one of the Eastern Conference's top teams.
Again, the most highly anticipated exhibition game the Carolina Hurricanes have ever played.
And the best preseason ever, because it's one game.
Oh, sign me up.
Yes.
All right. Want to get to some questions?
Yeah, let's knock out some questions. From Phil Chills919 on Twitter. If you had to pick a dream golf foursome from the current players, who's on it? Because Hayden Fleury said this week that he believes the Hurricanes have the best golfing team in the National Hockey League, and there's some stellar golfers on the roster. Well,
Justin Williams is an A player, and anytime I can get the opportunity to hang around Justin Williams, I'll do that. So we're playing in this, or we're putting a foursome together?
Well, I'm not playing it. I'm putting the foursome together. If I was a part of the foursome, we would be terrible.
Ah.
We'd be terrible.
Guys are there to carry you home. That's what it's about.
I would drive the cart.
All right. If I'm allowed to play, that means that I can only pick three players then. Justin Williams, Jordan Martinook, and, gosh, this is always so tough. Sebastian Aho is a guy who enjoyed being around. James Reimer is a fun guy to be around. Peter Mrazek's not bad.
I mean, if we're going...
Teuvo Teravainen. If we're going, like, straight good golfers, though.
Yeah.
Hayden Fleury is a great golfer.
Right.
Teuvo Teravainen is really good.
Brady Shea.
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of good stuff about Brady Shea's game.
I think if you're putting a golf foursome together, it's Justin Williams, Hayden Fleury, Brady Shea, and...
Yeah, but I want to have fun. So, Jordan Martin...
Those guys aren't fun?
No, they're serious and they're good. I am garbage. I'm a terrible golfer.
You're looking to have a couple of storm brews.
That's what it comes
down to. And hopefully
find
the fairway at some point.
Yeah, every now and again. Actually, no, I found out that if I actually hit a good drive and I'm on the fairway, I am better off being in the trash, because I hit it better out of the trash than on the fairway. It makes no sense, but it's true. Justin Williams, Jordan Martinook, and you always feel like you're leaving somebody out.
Joel Edmondson.
Joel Edmondson would be fun on the golf course.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's not bad. But if I'm putting together my foursome to win, Justin Williams, Hayden Fleury, Brady Shea, Teuvo Teravainen.
There you go. This from Alex at NHL Swift on Twitter. I would love to hear a bit about the expanded roster players like Suzuki, Lorenz, etc., and how they figured into training camp practices. Well, really, the Hurricanes have only skated in one group so far, and that was on Saturday when they staged the little intra-squad scrimmage. Now, again, they didn't have enough players to fully fill out two squads. It was more like two and a half lines, forward lines on either side, a couple of D pairs on either side. But mainly those players have been skating on their own. Well, not on their own. They're a couple coaches on the ice, but in a small group after the big, more NHL roster group skates during the morning. So you see guys like Lorenz, like Jake Bean, Ryan Suzuki, Max McCormick. Those guys have skated after the big group has skated. And
basically the black aces.
Yeah, and, you know, they're here and learning from some of the best. So really think of it as a training camp opportunity where early in camp they're learning from some of these NHL guys, or even think of it as an elevated development camp, which would be happening around this time of year anyway if it was a normal year. That's what this experience is for them. I'm sure the Hurricanes might bring a couple of them to Toronto just in case as black aces. But that's really what they're here to do, is just fine-tune their games and pick up some tips from the NHL level, whether that's from the NHL level coaching staff, the NHL level training staff, or the NHL players themselves. They're only going to better their game by playing with players that are at that higher level.
Matthew Herman chimes in.
Hey, Matt.
Based on the few games he has played and what you personally may have seen at camp, does Morgan Geekie find himself on the roster early on? Yeah, I think he finds himself on the roster. Now it's, does he find himself on the ice?
In the 18 that are playing?
I really, in my mind, there's something about a line with Jordan Martinook being centered by Morgan Geekie with Warren Fogle on the other side that I think is a dynamite playoff line.
Yeah.
Just a dynamite playoff line.
I think, you know, I know we've talked about the brevity of a five-game series and the importance of starting well, I think maybe you roll with them in game one and see what happens. And, you know, it's going to be a lot different from what he saw in the regular season in Pittsburgh and in Detroit. That Pittsburgh game had a playoff-like feel to it.
And maybe, the moment wasn't too big for him.
Right. So, you know, throw him right in. His first two games in the NHL, I think you throw him right in and see if he can swim.
And I like it because he's a natural center.
Yes,
and
correct.
That kind of keeps things in balance. This is the way.
This is the way.
Thank you. Another question. This from Archer for Canes. How do you see the defensive pairs playing out?
That's a great question.
Well,
Slavin,
I think we know
Hamilton.
Yeah, that one's easy right there. One more time.
Slavin, Hamilton. It looks like Shea and Vatanen might comprise the second pair. And then the third pair is a free-for-all because you have Jake Gardner, you have Hayden Fleury, you have Joel Edmondson, you have Trevor Van Riemsdyk, and only two of those players are going to be able to dress.
Yep.
I think Jake Gardner probably makes the cut because...
Power play.
Yeah, because he can be used on the power play and has been so far on that second unit. Him and Sami Vatanen have kind of swapped in and out. So that leaves, you know, Joel Edmondson, Hayden Fleury, and Trevor Van Riemsdyk, one of them dressing. I kind of lean towards Joel Edmondson because of his penalty killing abilities.
And his playoff experience last year.
He's, I think, probably the most physical of that bunch. So I lean that way. But you could make an argument for any of the three. And it's going to be a tough decision to make.
Well, remember, if you want to go left, right on the pairings.
Right.
If Trevor Van Riemsdyk is in, he is a right-handed shot. Jake Gardner's a left-handed shot.
Yep.
So you're going down to how do guys feel if you're going to say Joel Edmondson is in, how does he feel playing his offside? Do you like that? Is that what you want to roll with heading into the playoffs? So it's going to be interesting. Same thing with Hayden Fleury, who has played his offside as well. But it's I think if you want to be physical, you have Edmondson and Fleury. If you want puck movers, you've got Gardner and Van Riemsdyk. And again, if you want to go left D and right D, I think you're probably going to look at Jake Gardner is on that final pairing with Trevor Van Riemsdyk maybe to start. And then you can always rotate in Joel Edmondson and Hayden Fleury. It's tough because Fleury, I think, was playing his best hockey. Not of the season, his best hockey that we've seen him before the pause. Joel Edmondson, I want in the lineup because of the penalty kill and the fact that he's got playoff experience from last year in getting jobs done and doing the work that you need to. And he brings that physical presence that you do need in the playoffs. I'm not talking, and whenever we say that, it's not fighters anymore, but it's a guy who is going to throw a big hit, be willing to throw that big hit and make that play. So it's tough because two, not just NHL, sorry, I did air quotes to you, you're looking right at me, but not just because two NHL defenders are going to sit, two quality NHL defensemen are going to be in the press box for game number one.
Tough decision.
Did we answer her question? I think we kind of did.
To the best of our ability.
Okay.
The Florida Caniac. I want to know what kind of blazer and tie Mike Maniscalco is going to be rocking on his first game broadcast. I'm sure Rate Rod's ties would be curious as well. So let's talk about that real quick because you're going to be doing play-by-play for the Carolina Hurricanes in the playoffs, and that's very exciting.
Yeah, it is very exciting. I've said this before on the circumstances. It's bittersweet because of how the opportunity has come about. I don't think there's any reason to dwell any further on that. But I think everybody knows my opinion on John Forslund. We know yours on this as well. I've said it before. I said it in an article with Luke Dukak from the News and Observer. He is my line in the sand when it comes to who's the best voice in the National Hockey League, and I understand that. And for me, you know, you try to balance the excitement of calling these games and how exciting the playoffs are going to be from the qualifying round till, you know, the last second ticks off and the Stanley Cup is, you know, awarded to the winning team. I am so excited for the playoffs and for the chance, but at the same time, I understand the tremendous history of the voices of this organization. And I just want to honor everybody to it and the fans who are listening. I know how important the voices are, because I'm the same way. You know, you grow up listening to people, and it's they bring you the game. They bring you to it. And if I can do, you know, a quarter good of a job as anybody who's out there, then, you know, hopefully, you know, things turn out. But I'm excited for the opportunity, Michael. Again, not to belabor the point, I'm just looking forward to getting into the booth, settling next to Trip Tracy, and let's get going. And honestly, for me, it's a tremendous opportunity. I'm thankful that people think that I am skilled enough to handle this chance, and I'm going to do my best to try to make sure that everybody comes out of this knowing that, you know, I did my best, and it's, I know who I am. I know who I'm not. I'm just going to be me, and hopefully it all works out.
I think that's perfectly said.
Thank you.
Any idea on clothing just yet?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You got to run down the line.
I have no idea how I'm going to pack for Toronto.
Well, who's going to see you?
That's a good question.
There's no dress code from what I've been told. You could show up in a t-shirt and shorts. Yeah. You'd be fine.
Just like I have all quarantine.
Yeah, because you're going to be in the bubble, and I'm not.
That is correct.
I will be calling from a studio, which...
an undisclosed location.
As of right now. But I'll be calling the games off of a monitor. And the tough thing about calling hockey off of a monitor is a lot of the stuff you watch for as a play-by-play voice is what's happening behind the play, who's coming off of the bench. And you're kind of relying on TV to get it to you. But thank goodness I have Jim Malia and Paul Hemming, a.k.a. Chopper, to help me get through the best behind-the-scenes guys in the National Hockey League. But, yeah, it's going to be – it's somebody asked me this the other day. I go back to my 8-year-old self of turning off the volume and calling the game that I'm watching on my TV.
Yeah.
TV's a little bigger. Monitors are a little bit bigger now, so that's helpful. But as far as the suit and tie combination goes, probably going to go with game one, probably go with a black suit and a red tie, but I could go with the dark blue suit and the red tie.
Excellent.
With a blue shirt underneath.
I guess you'll just have to tune in to find out.
Yep.
Florida
only
Caniac.
One way to find out.
Here's one from Daisy Richeson. What were some of the things y'all did to stay entertained during the stay-at-home order? I have listened to lots of the older episodes of Kane's Cast. Fun way to pass the time. Well,
thank you.
Absolutely.
And hope you are both doing well. We are doing well, yeah. Daisy. Thank you. Hope you are as well.
Yes. To you and yours, Daisy. I played golf.
Oh.
I got to get out and play golf, socially distant. Had my own cart and all that when required. Wore the mask. And every home project that I've been putting off for about the last 2 years pretty much got done. Got
checked off the list.
Except for one. I have been grouting the back of my kitchen sink like since day one of the quarantine.
Oh, that doesn't sound fun.
It's not fun. Yeah. I've done it before, and I hate it.
Yeah.
Because you get dusty and dirty and water, and then you can't use the sink for like a day and all of that fun stuff. But I've installed lights. My downstairs, yeah, that was fun.
Not really.
I've told you the horrors of the person who owned the house before me, and they just left me even more to add to the book.
Yeah.
The tome of how could you do this to me. And now it's going to be bad if somebody wants to change the lights after me. They're going to think that I'm the idiot who did this. I just went with the plan that was already in place.
Yeah, we had an adventure with a toilet that was... similar to that situation.
It never sounds good.
Nope. You know, one of the previous owners did a thing that wasn't quite right, and then we had to deal with that.
Hey.
That was fun.
Your problem now, not my problem.
But yeah, I listened to a lot of different podcasts, consumed a lot of stuff on Netflix. And
oh, I binged watched early. Like early on, I went through 6 series of things.
Yeah.
And then I kind of got to the point, I'm like, I don't feel like binge watching things anymore.
Yeah.
Caught up on a couple of movies here and there that I'd missed out on. Now we can tell strength and conditioning coach Bill Berniston to move along. So we're almost at 90 minutes.
We also even haven't, you know what we forgot to do?
What's that?
If you like it, you can take it. If you don't, send it right back.
We could do that right now.
We could do it right now. I've had 4 months to think of something.
You don't have one, do you?
Nope.
I've got one for you.
Yes.
Much along the lines of what Brady Shea said, this will be the most exciting playoffs that we've seen in the NHL in quite some time.
Yeah, I'll take it. I mean, you're going to have to, you know, it's going to be weird without the fans. And so that, I think, affects the excitement in some form or fashion. Yep. But when you look at, I think, what sort of play and the level of play that we're going to have, you're going to have teams that are totally healthy. You know, they're not at the end of an 82-game season sort of limping in or whatever. They're totally healthy, ready to go, ready to roll. It's going to be really exciting, I think. And you're going to see some surprises, I think, early on in this qualifying round just because it is so short.
I like doing this one because it's put you on the spot. The Hurricanes will have at least 10 wins in this postseason.
Yeah, I'll take it. Sure. Yeah. Hopefully they have 19.
Not saying hopefully. I'm just saying it's like the guarantee, like 10, because that puts them in to the second round.
Yeah, they'll have 10, and hopefully they'll have 19.
That would be wonderful.
The toughest 19 wins in sports.
Absolutely. Goes from 16 to 19. Let's make it even harder.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, we don't even know who the Hurricanes might match up with in the first round. It could be any of those four teams, I guess.
Absolutely.
It all depends on...
Because they're reseeding once the... Reseeding. That's the other thing. It's not a...
And we don't even know the seeds because they haven't played the round robin. So yeah, whatever happens there and then whoever wins the qualifying rounds, it's all up in the air.
It's not a bracket. They're going to reseed, which, by the way, I like that. Yeah. I'm in favor of reseeding.
Yeah. I mean, for, you know, filling out a bracket purposes makes it very tough.
Yeah, but...
But it makes sense that the
In professional sports, I am in favor of reseeding after every round.
Yeah. That you give the top seed theoretically the easiest shot to get to the championship.
Yeah.
Which is why you play the 82 games, exactly. Or in this case, the 68.
Or 70 or...
Yeah.
Or
however many.
What game comes between 68 and 70?
69.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, I got another one for you, considering you had 4.5 months...
It's right on brand, you know.
Oh my gosh.
Fitting in with the podcast.
It's like we've never left.
Exactly. Give the fans what they want, and they want me to not think of a one for this segment.
Thank you. We'll get through all of this without incident.
The Hurricanes or the league at large?
The league at large.
I mean, hopefully so, but I mean, there have already been, I think, some flare-ups here and there during phase three, which is to be expected because, again, you're not in that controlled bubble environment. But I don't know. I mean, logic would say that there might be something somewhere at some point. And, you know, whether that ends up being an isolated incident or turns into a bigger thing, that's where I don't know. I think we're to the point, though, where they're going to be able to identify it and isolate it as quickly as possible so that it doesn't become a larger issue. Because that's where you start to have questions of, okay, well, if, you know, a team can't play, do they forfeit? Do you wait? You know, there's some questions like that. So I think we're to the point where enough details are hammered out to where they will be able to identify a positive test case in this scenario and hopefully be able to isolate it so that it doesn't become a larger community spread problem.
All right. That's it. That's what I've got. I mean, I have more, but I know you don't have one.
No.
All right. I think that will do it for this edition. It took a while.
It did take a while. So thank you to everybody who
kept asking.
Yeah,
I hope you understand. Kept the interest. I was going to say, I hope you understand why we couldn't really give you an answer.
Yeah.
We wanted to, but we couldn't really give you hey, this is when we're going to do this, because we didn't have the answer when we could. But episode 132, we're glad we could bring it to you, and we're glad that it's in the books.
And remember to pick up some Storm Brew, the absolutely official Canes beer. Crisp light lager made by our friends at R&D Brewing right here in Raleigh, North Carolina. At just 97 calories and 2.4 carbs per serving, it's the perfect brew for all occasions. And whenever there are home games at PNC Arena, again, a 16-ounce can is just $5.
So economical.
Taste the Storm at your local tap room. And most major retailers with new store locations added daily, just remember when you go to these places to wear a mask. And be responsible.
And enjoy the fact that you're drinking a crispy light lager. Oh, it's great.
It is delicious. We need some more here in studio. We'll talk to our friends at R&D about that and maybe share one here in the near future. Our plan is to continue these podcasts,
yes,
even though I will be in the bubble and you will be back here in Raleigh. Our plan is to continue these podcasts every Monday, as we do. If that changes for some reason, we'll let you know. But the plan is to stay the course and continue to put these out weekly.
You should be able to, just so we pull back the curtain on this, you should be able to join via the phone.
Yep.
Might be shorter versions because of that. Might only be, you know, half hour, 45-minute versions, but we'll do our best.
Yeah, we'll figure out a way to bring it to you. Might not sound as good as these do, but that's just... Hey,
if your voice is on there, you can make a Wolverine purse, sir. What's Anchorman?
It's a great movie.
It is.
It is a great movie. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks for sticking with us for going on 90 minutes now. Actually, probably past 90 minutes.
Well, we've had a lot to get to.
A lot to talk about. When you take 4 months off, there's a lot to cover in your first episode back.
All right. So we will be back next week with episode 133. But that'll do it for episode 132 of the Canes Cast. For the Web's Michael Smith.
And TV's Mike Maniscalco.
We will talk to you next week.
Moi, moi.
Thank you.
Thank you all for listening to this podcast.